in our lesson in this morning. I appreciate the songs that were led. Appreciate the prayer. Really appreciated Jason's Lord's Supper talk. Lord's Supper talks like that are hard to listen to, I feel like. I'm like in the back getting emotional trying that, because it's true. All of it is. But like he said, there our son, the Son of God was glorified, and we're able to think about who he is and the kind of life that he lived to redeem us and to save us. All right, so this year, it's not a theme sermon. I'm just starting with this slide on purpose. But this year, our theme is love one another. And we're three lessons in, and really last week, Russ talked a little bit about the idea of reasons why we need each other, really, and the ways in which we ought to love one another. And so whenever you're here and we think about the body and what the body does and what the body supports, and the plan is, if we do it right over the next few months, that by the end of the year, you are more encouraged and you are more desiring to love people in here. So let me ask you a question. Quarter mark assessment. Where are you at with that? With loving people. How do you feel like you're doing? Let's ask a different question. Instead of maybe thinking so much about loving one another, how do you feel like you're doing in loving, like, the others? Because the theme for this year is to talk about the love that we need to have with one another and really within the body. But as you think about love, love doesn't just love the people that it likes or love the people that are like them. Love just loves. And so what I want to do this morning is spend a little bit of time thinking about this idea of loving the others. Or the way maybe Jesus might say it in Matthew chapter 5, in loving your enemies. And I don't know about you, but whenever I love somebody, and maybe to think more of that phileo love, that more affectionate love, when I love somebody, boy, you could maybe, like, I don't know, I'm trying to figure out a nice way of saying this, but like when I really love somebody, I'm going to always assume the best in the decisions that they make. Even if like everybody else sees that's probably a poor decision. I'm going to hope the very best in all those situations. I'm going to want the best for them. I'm going to be willing to do whatever it is that I can do to help them and serve them. But for some reason, I don't know, maybe this is just me. Maybe this isn't you. But when I don't love someone, I don't always think the best about them. And decisions that they make that are questionable, I just automatically assume it's a bad decision. And that they're trying to do something malicious or they're trying to do something that's evil. And I don't know, like, again, maybe this isn't you, but when I think about the people that I deem, and maybe enemies is too strong a word, but the people that I deem as the others that I don't love, for whatever reason, I don't always think the best and hope the best and want the best, and that's just not me. And so, do you love people that you don't like? Again, this morning, we're going to spend a little bit of time thinking about this idea, and all I want us to do is start by reading the words of Jesus in Matthew chapter 5. In Matthew chapter 5, Jesus says, "You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy." That makes sense, doesn't it? "But I say to you, love your enemies." By the way, the little parentheses there is I'm borrowing from Luke chapter 6, where he kind of says the same thing, but he adds something else. "But I say to you, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you. And pray for those who persecute you or mistreat you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? If you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? Therefore, you are to be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect." So you notice just even in these verses, how Jesus starts. You have heard that it was said, and maybe in your mind, the way that you treat the others, the reason why you treat them the way that you treat them is because this is how you've been told to treat people who you don't love, to treat people who don't really fit in your box or who don't go to church with you or fill in the blank. This is how you've just heard or you've seen or you've been taught that this is how you treat people. That those who are really close to you, you love them. And those who aren't, you kind of keep at arm's length. Or Jesus might say, you hate them. But notice, again, as Jesus kind of comes down with this, he'll say, like, look, because this is what people are saying. Love those who love you. Greet only your brothers. This is what everybody else would have been saying. This is how everybody else would have been treating, again, kind of their surroundings. You know, the people that you're close with, your family, your friends, fill in the blank. You're good to them. You're kind to them. But other people, I don't know so much. So he says, this is what you've heard that it was said. But then notice what he says. But if this is how you treat people, then what reward do you actually have? If the way that you treat people is, if you're like me, I'll like you, but if not, not so much. Aren't you the same as everybody else? Don't tax collectors, don't the Gentiles do the same? And again, as Jesus is talking to this Jewish audience, in invoking both tax collectors and Gentiles, in their minds, he's thinking about, like, these are the worst kinds of people. The tax collectors would have been Jewish people, who are the worst kinds of people. And the Gentiles would have just been, in their mind, the worst, the most heinous kinds of people. And so in treating people like this, aren't you treating people like them? What makes you different? What reward, what more are you doing than others if this is how you treat people? So what I want to do for the time that we have is I want to maybe give an example of what it looks like to love your enemies. And I want us to actually go back to maybe in the Old Testament, to look at these two people who I think struggled with this idea. One person who I think did it well, one who didn't. And then come back to these verses and draw out some applications. So, loving your enemies. I don't know, when I think about like examples of like enemies kind of throughout the Bible, rivalries, I'm not sure there's one that stands out to me more than David and Saul. In 1 Samuel chapter 18, so if you read the story of 1 Samuel, in 1 Samuel chapter 17, David kills Goliath, right? Huge battle. The nation has won this victory. Everybody's happy. Before we had this enemy, his name was Goliath. He was taunting God. He was mistreating us. Things were terrible. I mean, things were just awful. Everybody was afraid. David, this kid, he comes and he slings a rock, kills Goliath. Everybody's happy now. The next chapter, the chapter ends by saying that thus Saul was David's enemy continually. So again, just think about this. You're David, and you've won this battle, not just to save the people of God, but that includes Saul, to help and save Saul. And the next chapter, Saul is viewing you as your enemy. And because Saul views David as an enemy, notice how it affects Saul and how it affects Saul's relationship both with David and the people around him. And think, whenever I view people as an enemy, am I tempted to do some of these things? So notice what happens to Saul. In chapter 18, you come back earlier in the chapter, it says that then Saul became very angry, for this saying displeased him. And he said, they have ascribed to David 10,000s, but to me they have ascribed thousands. Now what more can he have but the kingdom? Saul looked at David with suspicion from that day on. You drop down to verse 13. Therefore Saul removed him from his presence. David used to play the harp. Saul, I don't know why I did that. I don't even know if that's how you play a harp. But therefore Saul removed him from his presence and appointed him as a commander of 1,000. And he went out and came before the people. David was prospering in all his ways, for the Lord was with him. When Saul saw that he was prospering greatly, he dreaded him. Do you notice, like, again, just some of the buzzwords there, even in this section about how Saul feels about David? First of all, it actually starts with David wins this battle, and what the people are saying is, man, Saul has done some great things, but David has done some awesome things. Which, by the way, when you love somebody and they're being celebrated, do you care that they're being celebrated and that you're not? When you love someone and they're being celebrated, you want to celebrate with them. You know what I mean? You're happy for them. You did this awesome thing. You got this accolade. That's a great thing. But notice, whenever you don't love someone, you treat people the way that Saul treats people. He's displeased. Why are people praising him? Why are people looking at him? I did some things too. That's how Saul's treating him. And from then on, then everything David does, Saul's trying to look at him with some suspicion. Maybe he's coming after me too. Because again, this is what happens. Whenever we aren't loving people, and eventually where it will lead us to be displeased in the things that they do, to be suspicious, to not want them around us. He removes David from his presence. And then whenever David continues to do his thing away from Saul, then Saul is dreading David. And so what's happening with Saul is that instead of celebrating David, Saul is constantly filled with jealousy. But it's not just that. Saul despising David in this way doesn't just affect his relationship with David. You keep reading the chapter, and in verse 21, it says, so Saul thought, I will give her being his daughter, I will give her to him, that she may become a snare to him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Therefore, Saul said to David a second time, you may be my son-in-law today. And the idea here in the chapter is what's going to end up happening is Saul's going to say to David, you can marry my daughter, but the thing that you have to do to marry her is you have to go and kill 100 Philistines. And notice the reason why in verse 20, at the end of verse 25. Because Saul planned to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. Again, because of the jealousy, because of the fact that Saul despises David, the way that he ends up treating him, it's not just that he hates him, and it's this internal feeling, but Saul ends up using the people around him. In fact, he ends up using his family to try to get to David. What you think about this, right? Whenever you dislike someone, maybe this isn't you, but whenever you dislike someone, do you ever keep that dislike to yourself? Or somehow, some way, does that dislike kind of seep out, and then you kind of tell the people around you? So that we can just cut the person down some way. That's what Saul is doing in these verses. And really, as you read the rest of 1 Samuel, because Saul will die at the end of the book, the rest of his life is him filled with seeking to destroy David. I mean, he's consumed with this. And I think maybe that's part of the Lord's wisdom in telling us to love our enemies, is that if we allow ourselves to hate, if we allow ourselves to be given to this anger, to be given to this dread, it will consume you. That whenever you're around this person, it's the only thing you can think of. Do you have people like that in your life? That whenever you're around them, you're just angry. And you don't want to be around them. And you're frustrated. And you're thinking about all the evil things you wish you could tell them, but you can't because you're a Christian. Like, you're just filled with that. So you're David. And this is how Saul feels about you. What would the temptation be? All right, man, you don't like me? That's fine. I don't like you either. You don't respect me, that's cool. I don't respect you either. You don't love me? Guess what? I don't care. Ten thousands of people are loving me. Well, I don't need your praise. I don't need you to love me. Bye. I want you to notice, we're going to look at two different stories very quickly to see how David responds to this. Right, in chapter 24, the 1 Samuel has already set up this idea that Saul does not like David. And by the way, I don't think David like has this like affectionate feelings towards Saul, but notice how David is going to treat Saul. In 1 Samuel chapter 24 and in verse 6, so what's ended up happening is that Saul has come after David, but David kind of has the upper hand, and David has the opportunity to kill Saul. And notice what he says in 24 verse 6. So he said to his men are saying, hey, just kill him, he's here, we can kill him, let's just get rid of him. And David says, far be it from me because of the Lord that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, since he is the Lord's anointed. In verse 10, again, he dropped down, and this is David talking. He says, some said, he's talking to Saul at this point, some people have told me to kill you, but my eye had pity on you. And I said, I will not stretch out my hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. In chapter 26, a few chapters later, same kind of very same similar situation. But David said to Abishai, do not destroy him, for who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be without guilt? Multiple times, listen, regardless of how Saul feels about David and how David might feel about Saul, David understands how God feels about Saul. And because of that, that's going to affect the way that David is going to treat him. That David views Saul as worthy of certain treatment, as worthy of love, because of who he was in God's eye. And as we think about, again, the people that you might deem as enemies, or the people that you might deem as the others, that I don't like them, or that I might be prone to thinking evil thoughts about them, you need to think about how God thinks about them. Because this is how David is viewing the situation. God views him a particular way. And so because of that, I might be tempted. In fact, the people around me are telling me to kill him, and I might want to. But he's God's anointed, so I'm not going to do anything like that. You keep reading in the story, chapter 24. This is, as you look at the stories, the verses right act, kind of in between, sandwiched between 6 and 10. In verses 8 and 9, David is talking to Saul, and David is asking Saul, why are you listening to the words of men who are telling you, behold, David seeks to harm you? You see what David is saying there? Whatever it is, these ideas that you have that's creating this animosity between you and I, this is not coming from me. You're listening to people who are just filling this situation up with gossip. He says, I'm not going to stretch out my hand. In verse 12, he says, may the Lord judge between you and me, and may the Lord avenge me on you, but my hand shall not be against you. You see what he's saying in verse 12? You know, if the situation ends up where you kill me, let God avenge. But I'm not going to do anything. This is not for me to go and to avenge myself in chapter 26. Again, like, same situation happens a few chapters later. In other words, there's multiple times when Saul is trying to kill David. But notice what he says in verse 18. He's talking to David and he says, why then is my Lord pursuing his servant? What have I done? What evil is in my hand? Now therefore, please let my Lord the king listen to the words of his servant. If the Lord has stirred you up against me, let God accept an offering. But if it is from men, cursed are they before the Lord. Again, do you see David's point here? Is that David isn't going to be swayed by groupthink. You know what I mean? Whenever you don't like somebody or somebody doesn't like you, what ends up happening is that as you talk to people, those people oftentimes are going to give you more reasons to dislike that person. By the way, are you a part of the groupthink? You know what I mean? That whenever people are talking about a situation or are talking about a certain person who you may not like, do you perpetuate lies? Or are you someone who seeks peace? Because that's what David is doing. Both times that David finds himself with Saul, both times David is trying to find peace. Let's squash this. Why are we treating each other this way? This doesn't make any sense. I haven't done anything wrong. You keep going. And again, even with this, David does not give Saul a reason to think ill of him. That might be one of the hardest ones, I think. Because, if you are treating me harshly, if you're seeking my life when I haven't done anything in the first place, then I might be tempted to treat you kind of poorly. But notice what Saul says. By the way, both of these are things that Saul says after the two interactions. In verse 17, he says to Saul, you are more righteous than I, for you have dealt well with me, while I dealt wickedly with you. You have declared today that you have done good to me, and that the Lord delivered me into your hand, but you didn't kill me. In chapter 26, verse 21, it's the same thing, same situation. And Saul comes to this conclusion, I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will not harm you again, because my life was precious in your sight this day. Behold, I have played the fool and have committed a serious error. You notice what Saul's saying? Saul's saying, you had reason to treat me a particular way and you did not. And David doesn't even give Saul an opportunity to think evil against him. Let me tell you, sometimes maybe some people view me as enemies, and it's because things that I've done. Or maybe things that they said that at the beginning I hadn't done anything, but then I heard them say some things. And so then I kind of like, I played the role. You know what I mean? And what Saul is saying is that, David, you're not even giving me an opportunity to want to treat you poorly. I want to, but you're not letting me. Like, this is how we're told to treat our enemies, to do good to them. Don't even give them an opportunity to say evil things about them. Don't even give them an opportunity to want to treat you meanly. And lastly, and this to me is the one that stands out the most, is that even, so what ends up happening, again, this is in chapter 26, the last interaction that David has with Saul. Because a few chapters later, so David will flee, and a few chapters later, Saul gets killed. And news comes to David that Saul is dead. Now imagine, you're David, you've sought peace, you've tried to do what's right, and now Saul is dead. Yes. I didn't have to do it, somebody else did it, right? This is great. Awesome. They're gone now. I don't have to worry about them anymore. I don't have to see them anymore. Things are good. 2 Samuel chapter 1, verses 11 and 12. After David hears about the death of Saul, it says in verse 11, then David took hold of his clothes and tore them, and also all the men who were with him. They mourned and wept and fasted until evening, not just for Jonathan, who would have been David's best friend, but for Saul and his son Jonathan, and for the people of the Lord and the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. Even after Saul dies, David isn't celebrating his death. Even after he's gone and he's no longer with them, he's seeking to respect him. He's seeking to show him honor. In fact, so much so that when he gives this dirge after he's dead, and notice what he says. As he's singing this song, And he's like, teach this song to your children. Let people remember this legacy about Saul. The shield of Saul was not anointed with oil. He says, again, the sword of Saul. Saul and Jonathan, verse 23, beloved and pleasant in their life. Which, again, you read the story and you're like, no, he wasn't. Especially not to you, David. But this is how David is choosing to remember Saul. He's choosing to remember him well. He's choosing to remember him in honor. He's choosing to remember the good. Again, with your enemies, is this how you want to treat them? Is this how you try to treat them? Maybe, all right, you know what? Maybe while you're with me, I'll treat you well. But as soon as you're gone and I have the opportunity, boy, I am going to tarnish your name. That's not what David does. In fact, again, David holds this so much that in a few chapters, we won't read all of this, but in a few chapters, another one of Saul's sons gets killed. And David mourns again. And then a few chapters later in 2 Samuel, you find out that David is taking care of Saul's grandson. That blows my mind. You're taking care of this guy's grandkids? Why? This dude didn't even like you. Again, because David knew who Saul was in God's eyes. And so again, even after all of this, David didn't let whatever personal issues he had with Saul prevent him from treating his enemy as God would have him to treat him. And I don't know what issues you may have with the people that you dislike, or whatever, or maybe even people that you don't know that for whatever reason you dislike. You know what I mean? But whatever those issues are, I don't think that God wants you treating them as an enemy. And so again, what are some practical lessons that we learn from our Lord about how to treat our enemies? Going back to Matthew chapter 5, we're going to just spend the rest of our time here and we'll wrap up. In Matthew chapter 5, again, Jesus starts by saying, "You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemies." Then the next thing he says is, "But I say to you." And whatever he is saying is actually the standard for how you treat people. It's actually the standard. Jesus sets the standard for loving your enemies. Not whatever it is that you've been heard, that you heard. Not whatever it is that your group think people have told you. Not whatever it is that you saw in your family. That's not the standard. The standard for how you treat your enemies is how Jesus treats his enemies. And what Jesus himself has said. Which, by the way, if you notice what he says, this is how you treat your enemies. If they smack you, don't smack them back. If they take your cloak, give it to them. If they tell you to go a mile with them, go two. Is that what he says? But he says, if someone does that, those are the verses right before. Which, by the way, if my enemy did those things to me, I'd be tempted to not retaliate. But notice, that's not even what he says about the enemy. What he says to do with your enemies is to not be neutral, to be active. And again, oftentimes, I think we are complacent with saying, well, I didn't treat my enemy poorly. And that's not what Jesus is saying. He doesn't say, don't treat them poorly, don't treat them badly. He says, do something for them. That love is active. And so he says, love your enemies. Do good. Bless. Like, those are verbs. These are things that we need to be doing. And so as I think about what the Lord wants for me as far as how I ought to be treating my enemies, I have to realize that I can't just sit back and say, well, you know what? I didn't say a bad thing about you, even though I thought it. It's more than that. The standard is more than that. It's greater than that. It's deeper. It's to go and do some things. And if you notice what the things are, he is calling you to love your enemy and what I believe is in every aspect. Again, to reiterate, this is not like an affectionate love. Jesus isn't calling you to just feel like affectionately sweet towards your enemies. You may never feel that. But the love that he's calling you to have is a voluntary love. You can turn this on. You can do these things. Even if you don't feel a certain way about certain people. It's a choice love. And so he says, do good. You can choose to do good to them. To seek whatever their good is, that's something that you think about that. I think about that's you and them. That as you think about your relationship with them, you can do good to them. But it's more than just when I'm with you, I'm going to do good to you. Notice the next thing. He says, and bless those who curse you. The idea of blessing, to bless is eulogos, is to say good things. It's to speak. So Jesus isn't just telling me to love my enemies and the things that I do. He's telling me love my enemies in the way that I speak about them. Maybe the way that I speak about them and the ways in which I speak to them. Love my enemies. You might have been tempted, again, when you're not around them, to say some things that are unsavory. That's not how you treat your enemies. You love them. And so you speak good to them. And then you go to, like, then this to me might be the hardest thing. Then he says, and pray for those who persecute you. You know what is interesting to me? You read the Psalms. And even in the Psalms, when someone is lamenting and when someone is angry, the Psalms are kind of like, God, I don't know why my enemies are here. I don't know why things are so terrible. I don't know. And it starts all angry. And then you keep reading the Psalm and it softens up. Because I would imagine that if I prayed more for my enemies, I would have a hard time going to God saying, God, I just don't understand. The same God who I was his enemy. And in Romans chapter 5, he decided to redeem me. And I think that if we embodied this more, if you went the extra mile in love for your enemies, that they might not be your enemies as much as you think they are. Sometimes, again, maybe enemies is a strong word, but you understand what I'm saying. Sometimes we have enemies and we're kind of okay with them being our enemies. You kind of like having someone that you can be a little antagonistic to. I think if we treated people like this, and that's not always the case, but if we treated people like this, sometimes they don't continue to be your enemies. Which, by the way, as you're loving them, though, this isn't conditional. It's not bless those who bless you. Do good unto those who do good to you. You know? Love your enemies. Like Jesus knows that they're not your best friend. Do good to those who hate you. Pray for those who persecute you. Not who persecuted you. Not who cursed you. I think part of the idea is that they might actively continue to be doing these things. But this love isn't conditional. It's not love them if they love you. It's love them while they hate you. Love them while they mistreat you. Love them while they don't like you. Love them anyways. Do these things anyways. Because again, he says, like, if you only love like everybody else loves, then what different are you? What are you showing them that's different? So if you look at kind of sandwich after he says, do these things, verse 45, so that you may be sons of your Father. And then he says, for God sends the rain on the just and the unjust and the righteous and the unrighteous. His point is, God is doing these things to everybody. He blesses and he helps everybody. And then verse 48, therefore you are to be perfect. And that perfect, I believe, is complete. And I actually think in context, he's talking about this. The way that you are going to be complete is by how you treat your enemies. As your Heavenly Father is perfect. And if you only love like the world, how are they supposed to see God in you? This love that God is calling us to have, in some ways, it feels unnatural. I think it's completely natural to God because it's who God is. But it's unnatural to us. But isn't that kind of the point? For us to be a little unnatural? For us to do some things that just seem a little strange? This is the standard of love that God is giving us. I'm going to leave you with a few questions here to think about. At least things that I've thought about this past week. As I've thought about maybe ways in which I need to treat some people better. Question number one, so as I think about loving the others, whoever the others are, and you can fill in that blank on your own. Question number one, or it's not a question, sorry. This is the only statement, then everything else is a question. Galatians chapter 4, Paul is writing this book, and in 4:16 he's like, why don't you love me? I love you guys, why don't you love me? I think maybe he's part of the idea here. Not everybody's going to love you. Choose to love them anyways. And that word choose is intentional. Because loving someone in this way, in this agape way, is a choice. It's voluntary. You have the option, regardless of how they treat you. And so this love that we have isn't just for the people you want to love. It's also for the people you don't want to love. God is calling us to love everyone. So not everybody's going to love you. Like, newsflash, I'm sorry to say this to you if you haven't heard it before. This might be crazy to think about. But you should love them anyway. All right, here we go. Now the questions. Do you know that Jesus died just as much for you as he did for your enemies. Like Jason's Lord's Supper talk about how they hung him on the cross. There they crucified him. And there they, and there they, and there they. And in some ways, we were part of the they. But you know, it's easy to think, and my enemies were definitely a part of the they. They crucified him. But so did I. And Jesus died. If my enemy were the only person in the world, Jesus would have died for them. Just as much as he would have died for me. Do I recognize that? Because I think if I did, it might help in how I desire to treat them. Maybe here's a more practical question. Even if it's not your first instinct to, can you choose to assume the best, to avoid gossip and to do good unto others? It might not be your first instinct. Again, you might see them do something, and you might think, I knew it, just like. But can we assume the best in people? All those things that you would do towards the people that you really, really love, you know, when they do kind of silly mistakes and you're like, that was kind of dumb. Like, you're like, you know what, but I know you and I know. Can we try to be this way towards our enemies? Here's a third question here. Maybe this idea of loving your enemies at its core should go back to how much do I love God? Am I willing to love God enough that I'm going to do his will and seeking and saving the lost even when I don't want to? Like, am I willing to love God enough that I'm going to love my enemies? So I'll be honest, sometimes when I choose to not love my enemies, it's because I love me a little bit more than I love God. Because God loves them and God is telling me to love them. And I'm just choosing that I'm not going to. Next question here. When you think about your enemies, this is who your real enemies are. What the New Testament says. Your real enemy is the devil. Your real enemy is sin. Your real enemy in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 is death. Are your enemies that bad? Like, is your enemy the devil bad? You know what I mean? Is your enemy the embodiment of sin bad? Are they that irredeemable? It doesn't matter who your enemy is. No one is irredeemable. And there's something interesting that David says to Saul at the end of his interaction with him. He says, I hope that God treats me the way that I treated you. If God valued your life the way you value the life of your enemies, what would you be worth? More or less. But that's not how he valued you. That's not how he valued me, at least. Because in Romans chapter 5, while we were yet enemies, Christ died for us. By the way, he died for everyone, with no expectation that everyone was going to follow. But he died hoping that someone will. And if you're not a Christian, but you're here this morning, you have been an enemy of God, just like I was an enemy of God. But he died for me. And I saw that love, and I decided I didn't want to keep being an enemy anymore. And so the next chapter of Romans talks about how we can go from being enemies to being a part of him, to being a part of his body, which is through the waters of baptism. Maybe you're a Christian and you just haven't been living the right way. You've been living like an enemy. You've been living against Christ. God isn't just calling you to love your enemies. He's calling you to love him and to be reconciled with him. And if we can help you in any way, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.